They're at risk, should call 888-364-3065, where you can talk to experts that can determine if and how to be tested. Walk-ins will not be seen. Once again, call 888-364-3065 to make an appointment for COVID-19 testing available at Stony Brook University. This has been a public service announcement from Stony Brook University and WUSB-FM.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It is 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall once more. It's Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
and don't give you much of a chance to check your microphone there. That's, can you say maybe a two-syllable word?
Yes, sir.
That's not loud enough. Maybe if you could move the microphone a little closer to you and say three syllables, I could make sure you have the right volume.
Subtraction.
It's a good word. I think that'll do. That's fine. Speaking of words, there's an ongoing court hearing in progress right now involving Rudolph Giuliani in Pennsylvania. I'm just looking at updates occasionally. People are live tweeting it, and it's really funny because Giuliani tells the court he doesn't know what opacity means. I think I'm pronouncing it right, and I think I know what it means too. Opacity, right? It's like opaqueness, which means not transparent.
Do you think
I'm right on that? I mean,
on the other side of translucent.
Yeah, I'm not in court. I'm not Giuliani. He should know what that word means. I don't know why it came up, probably because somebody called him that.
Opacity would be like all the redacted lines in the affidavits they submitted.
See, you've corrected me. It's opacity, not opacity. I said opacity.
You say things however you want. I'll say them how I want. I say opacity.
Yeah, but that's not how it works. You're supposed to say it right, and I like to know when I'm not saying it right.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, how do you say Spokane?
Okay, all right. You want to open that kettle of fish.
Your can
it's
of
a kettle of
fish.
Is there a kettle
of monkeys?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Kettle. Why would you open the kettle in the first place?
Can of worms.
It's a can of worms. No, I agree with that. It's definitely a can of worms. So what's in a kettle? Kettle of fish. A kettle is what you boil tea in or boil the water for the tea. Okay, whatever. But, yeah, I do want to open that. I do want to open that package.
Nah, come on. We have so much to live for.
Spell that city, please. Are you refusing to spell the city? Come on. Let the record show that Kyle is not spelling the second S city in Washington State. Which on the other radio show, I made the mistake. And I admit it was a mistake of pronouncing it Spokane instead of Spokane. But the reason I pronounced it that way is because I was following the rules of English, which is the language I was taught. And it has to do with the silent E and the long vowel that precedes it. So K-A-N-E, which is how that word ends, has a silent E. Therefore, the A should be long, i.e., A. Sorry. I just said a whole bunch of vowels there at the end of my sentence, and it made sense. Yes, Kane, not can. But you know what? It's an idiom. It is an idiom. I think that's the right word for it. And that's not an insult. It just is a weird way of doing it, and you, being from Washington State, would know that. Me, being from New York, would not. Hey, that highway, the Van Something Expressway. Well, I forget the name escapes me. You remember it goes to Kennedy Airport?
Van Ness?
No, not that.
Van Nuys?
No, not Van Nuys.
Van Morrison?
It's spelled W-Y-K. How would you say that?
Oh, Van Wyck.
Yes, but it's not. It's Van Wyck.
Oh.
Yeah, so we can do it too. We can do this all day long if you want.
Okay, well, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Talking about idioms, I wrote the dictionary on idioms. Okay, so Thanksgiving's coming up, folks. In all seriousness now. Thanksgiving is coming up, but you all shouldn't be getting together except for the people that are already in your house who can't escape. And that means not visiting grandma and grandpa, not visiting aunt and uncle, not visiting brothers-in-law and sisters-in-law and second cousins and first cousins. No, because if you do that, the odds of spreading the virus more, and you can see, if you just look at the news a little bit, that it's really getting popular now, you don't want to be a part of that. You don't want to be getting your relatives sick. You don't want it to be spreading throughout your community. And that is exactly what will happen if you merge households together at this point. It sucks, I know. Nobody is enjoying this. Believe me, it's not some kind of democratic plot to somehow cancel Christmas or whatever. It's a virus. It's a pandemic. It's something we've never lived through before, unless you're 100 years old. And the only way we are going to get through this without an actual catastrophic price, which has already been a really bad price we've had to pay, but to make it even worse, ignore what the scientists, what the doctors are saying. Yeah, you know, I had a doctor's appointment last week, and the doctor said to me, we wound up having a 45-minute political conversation. He had patients waiting. It didn't matter. I like that. And he said to me, you know, I've had dozens and dozens of people who have died from this disease. This is a local person saying that, dozens and dozens. And the one thing he wished was that people would just take it seriously, be responsible, not try and politicize it. Why is that so hard? We're seeing it again with restrictions about gathering in large numbers. What are people doing? They're attacking Cuomo. They're saying it's his fault somehow. Yeah, it's the governor's fault for saying this is how you stay safe. If you want to blame it on anybody, blame it on the person who didn't take it seriously. You know who I'm talking about. Blame it on the person who didn't send funds to the right places, didn't send materials to the right places, made this so much worse. With 250,000 people dead in this country now, didn't have to be that way. So, next Thursday, not this Thursday coming up, the one after that, find another way to celebrate. And my idea for this is to simply postpone it, not cancel it. Push it down the road 6 months. With the positive news about possible vaccines, two of them in the last couple of weeks, 90% and 95% effectiveness. All right, if that is true, then this thing is limited in its remaining show times. It'll be gone. And in 6 months, maybe it'll be gone enough where we can actually have a real Thanksgiving. If we do that, that'll be on Thursday, May 27th, exactly 6 months from Thanksgiving. And the beauty of that, Thursday, May 27th, it's right before Memorial Day weekend. So an entire 5 days in a row of just giving thanks for one thing or another. Imagine how happy we'll be then. So we're not canceling Thanksgiving, we're just moving it a little bit. And I think we should do that for everything. We should figure out Halloween, give something to the kids for the spring, and Christmas, same thing. Graduations, all the things people have missed. We figure out a way to give it to them. And, you know, that way we at least come out of this feeling like we've survived, you know, we've gotten through something together. And we haven't forgotten. So many people who passed away from this disease weren't able to have funerals. That's something that I really can't wrap my head around. And for them, and for the families, we ought to have really special memorial services at some point. The important thing is not to forget. The important thing is not to simply sweep it under the rug and say, okay, well, we got through that. We're ready for the next challenge. Now, this has affected people. It will affect people for years to come, emotionally and spiritually, all sorts of ways. So keep that in mind when we have special events coming up and gatherings. And for God's sake, wear those masks outside. You know, I'm happy to see most people are wearing masks, walking around. Still the few idiots who aren't. I don't know what's going through their heads. Hopefully not the virus, but in some parts of the country, it's not like that at all. North Dakota, for instance, they recorded the world's highest COVID-19 mortality rate, the world's highest, North Dakota. Imagine that. Wasn't that the place they had the massive bike rally? Was that North Dakota or South Dakota? One of them.
I believe Sturgis is in one of those two states. Yeah, you're talking about the Harley show or whatever. It's in Sturgis. I think that's in North Dakota, I want to say, but I don't know. I don't really care either.
Well, I mean, it would certainly...
I don't care.
No, I'm not debating that.
Oh, okay.
But it certainly would explain a lot if events like that were happening, why this is something. People should not be perplexed by this. This is exactly what scientists have been saying from the beginning, exactly what people have been warned about. So, by all means, don't be surprised.
Do you think that in-person voting had an effect?
No, because, well, it depends. You know, if you encourage everybody to take off their masks and hug each other, yeah, then maybe, but I don't think that's what was happening.
Wouldn't this be, though, like around 2 weeks after? And, yeah, maybe not everyone is doing that, but you have everyone doing something with a good percentage on that very day going, and how many of those numbers that go to a polling place also don't believe in X, Y, or Z, and thus here you go with spikes rising all over the country simultaneously. I mean, kind of tracks, doesn't it?
Well,
even
it also,
it's just a tiny percentage, right?
It kind of tracks to the predictions that this is almost to the day when things would start going up because of colder weather, because people are inside more. It's possible. It's possible that, some polling places were spreading events.
Well, they're all factors, right?
But the thing to keep in mind is that you're not there for hours.
No.
The actual voter is there for a couple of minutes, presumably is wearing a mask, and then leaves. Now, for people that were online for a long period of time, that's a bit more risky, and hopefully they were outside for that long period of time, unfortunately. Yeah, there were so many things that could have gone wrong. But, you know, you have to say, how come we're not seeing that kind of super spreader event here? You know, if it was election
everyone
day.
Here because, voted by mail.
No, not everyone. Not everyone, not at all.
Well, you didn't.
I didn't, and a lot of people were also waiting online for early voting, so it wasn't all voting by mail. By the way, voting by mail, they're finally counting it in Suffolk County right now. They started yesterday. I don't know why they waited so long. But fine, they're counting it now, so we might find out state assembly race locally, which I assume Steve Englebright will win.
If New York is a blue state, wouldn't that track? And then most Democratic voters voted by mail. Wouldn't you be able to say, okay, yeah, I'm going to say maybe as far as in-person voting goes, New York's probably not going to show as much of a result. And here we are, 2 weeks later, New York is not as bad, right?
It's possible, but
I don't know. I'm not a statistician or scientist.
I'm not either. But
if I was going to point to something 2 weeks ago, I would say voting. So,
but it's also going up in Canada, Kyle, and they didn't vote in Canada.
Well, that's true.
All right, so I think it's more the time of year than anything else. But regardless, it's happening throughout the country. North Dakota, again, let me stress this, the world's highest COVID-19 mortality rate. That's not the highest rate of people testing positive. That's the highest rate of people dying in North Dakota. 18.2 deaths per million. That is a lot. Maine has set another single-day record with 246 new coronavirus cases, one additional death. They're sparsely populated up there, too, so that number might seem low if you're from a state with a lot of people, but it's very worrisome. 300-person wedding in Washington State led to at least 17 coronavirus cases. Wedding ceremony was held November 7th in a private location near Ritzville, about 59 miles southwest of Spokane. The Grand County Health District did not release details about the wedding, but said in a Facebook post Monday, 17 people associated with the wedding tested positive for COVID-19, and that more cases are being added daily. There have also been two subsequent outbreaks linked to guests at the wedding who tested positive for COVID-19. So things like this are happening everywhere. You read about different gatherings, different weddings, birthday parties, things like that. We had one out here in Miller Place, and they turned into super spreader events. And people who went to those events wind up spreading it to other people who then get sick, and some of them die, who weren't even at the event to start with. That's how scary it is. Meanwhile, three New York sheriffs, this is the story the media is fixating on, three New York sheriffs say they won't enforce Cuomo's Thanksgiving limit. Now, this came from the New York Post, so take it for the value that it's worth, which isn't much. Cuomo's Thanksgiving limit, okay, yeah, Cuomo's the governor, I know that, and he makes rules and passes down declarations and things like that, and everybody resents it. People on the left don't like anybody in power, and people on the right just hate him. I get it. But how is this a story? First of all, I don't think cops are going to be coming into people's homes counting the people. I don't think that was ever a possibility. But they went and did some detective work and found some sheriffs up in upstate New York that hate Cuomo and are resentful and want to say nasty things about him, and turn that into the story. Instead of the fact that you shouldn't have 10 people or more in your house, because if you do, you're going to be causing real problems for them and for other people. That's what the story should be about. Not how dare Cuomo say this. Well, would you rather have a governor that doesn't believe in it? South Dakota, for instance. I have some info on what the South Dakota governor was saying. Because North Dakota, they are implementing masks. They're finally saying, oh, you know what? Wear those damn masks. They actually do some good after all. But South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who, by the way, is a close ally of President Trump's, has vocally opposed mask mandates and questioned the efficacy of masks as a safeguard against the spread of the virus. So, at last, we might see a difference between North Dakota and South Dakota. So, we have that coming up. All at the same time, we have a disputed election. Not disputed legitimately, disputed by people who don't know how to lose. And on Saturday, there was a whole bunch of people that went down to Washington, D.C. And again, the difference between gathering for a demonstration where people are intelligent and wearing masks, a la Black Lives Matter, and various other social justice rallies where people pay attention to scientists, so many people in this group were not wearing masks. So look for some spreading events to come out of that when they all go back home and spread it amongst their friends and family. Did you watch any of that on C-SPAN or on any of the news networks?
No.
Well, I saw a little bit of it, and it was disturbing. It was disturbing seeing all these people that honestly didn't believe that the election took place, that it was some kind of plot, some kind of conspiracy. And the reason, obviously, they believe this is because that's what they're told. And when you're in a cult, you listen to what you're told. You follow it. So all of these different states that had problems, that happened to be the states where Trump was edged out. You notice how they don't talk about any of the states where he won. Apparently, things were perfect in those states. But all the ones that were key in his losing, they all had some hanky-panky going on. Just enough so that enough Biden votes would come in and Trump would wind up losing. But they're on to them. It's just like every conspiracy we ever hear about, whether it's Barack Obama's birth certificate or what really happened on 9/11, etc., etc., there's always somebody who knows exactly what happened. And there's this massive conspiracy that everybody was playing a part in. And they performed their task perfectly. But there was that one person who knew the truth and was able to leak the information out, however unlikely. And that's what's being covered up by the mass media. It's so absurd. And most people know this. Most people on both sides know this. But not enough who have the power to do something about it have the guts to do anything about it. Most of them are playing along with Trump just to, in their eyes, keep the peace. And it's having the exact opposite effect. Because when you have tens of thousands of people, I imagine that's how many people there were. I heard Trump saying millions and millions. Of course, it wasn't that. It wasn't a million. It wasn't anything near that. But I think it was at least 10,000 people down there. When you have that kind of thing, it's dangerous. It's dangerous when they're all down there on false assumptions, on lies, and when they're told that the democratic process does not work in this country, that they're being lied to, that Joe Biden is not going to be a legitimate president, that people like us are out there stealing votes. That causes real problems. And if you let that happen, you're guilty of causing those problems. There was a lot of violence after the sunset in Washington, D.C. I saw a number of videos. And it was when the Proud Boys came out. Yeah, the Proud Boys were marching. They were out there. And what you saw on the right-wing outlets was this feigned indignation that people were fighting back against the Proud Boys. Keep in mind, the Proud Boys are violent. They are white supremacists. They are not good people. And I'm somebody who believes that Nazis need to be punched. Just do. I'm all for throwing things at Nazis. I mean, isn't that kind of what World War II was about? Throwing things at Nazis, big things, but throwing things at Nazis.
Well, dropping things off.
Yeah, your grandpa did that.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah. I like to think we still have those values. And that if people march down the street saying these vile, terrible things, that we're there to show the other side forcefully. But the right-wing media and our own white supremacist leader, Lee Zeldin, were there, not there in person, but there to basically condemn people who were attacking the Proud Boys. I want to read you what our good representative, Lee Zeldin, said about this. There are so many things here. The president's supporters have a right to peacefully rally supporting POTUS just like his opponents have that same right. The physical assaults today by violent leftists targeting his supporters is abhorrent. The near total media blackout of the violence is terrible and telling.
I feel like we need to speak to this term violent leftist, because in the heat of these little confrontations, how do we know that's not like false flag stuff?
Oh, there is.
Actual Nazis.
Because
if you want a scapegoat, make it Antifa, make it the leftists. That seems pretty convenient to say the leftists are violent, but how do we know that isn't actual groups of neo-Nazis that are there, and the Proud Boys don't know? They're super perceptive, I would suspect. Read that as sarcastic. But, like, are they really going to be able to tell if someone's there trying to misdirect them? I mean, that just blaming without any proof that leftists are the violent ones and turning a blind eye at the Proud Boys, I find that pretty low.
I find that pretty much what we've been going through the last 4 years.
A lot.
Because that is exactly...
It's familiar.
Let me read you what Lee Zeldin said when Charlottesville happened. I did a little digging today. All right, here's what he said. For some reason, he tweeted twice in 1 minute, 5:37 p.m., on August 12, 2017. Violent acts in Charlottesville, Virginia are disgusting, un-American, and unwelcome in our great nation. And then that same minute he tweeted, differences will exist and it is okay to disagree, but the violence in Charlottesville today is absolutely not the right way to disagree.
But he's not talking about the people with the torches,
well,
right?
Well, you know, that's interesting. Why not call them out by name?
Right, because he can completely disavow having directed that at the actual guilty parties, the people who are actually promoting hate, and conveniently slide Antifa into those comments so that he can not lose that precious base.
I don't think they had defined Antifa by that point. It was just basically the left. Or
all the better, though.
Yeah.
It's not definable. It's an ideology or it's a philosophy. It's not a group with shirts and logos like the Proud Boys or whomever else.
Well, what we're seeing here is what we're not seeing. We're not seeing blame given to the violent right-wing extremists. Lee Zeldin does not do that. Donald Trump does not do that. Lee Zeldin does what Donald Trump does.
And it's a latent dog whistle.
It's a pretty blatant one as far as I'm concerned, but yeah, it is. Some of the people replying to those tweets back then in 2017, listen to a couple of these. White supremacy and neo-Nazism is not something you disagree with. differences, is someone else, differences will exist. Oh, I'm sorry, that's him saying that. Trying to be so fair between the fascists.
That's
and,
a fine little line yeah. trying to walk there.
This person, bro, differences? Jefferson and Hamilton had differences. if it were me, I'd be a little more specific in denouncing neo-Nazis. Someone else, not really right for the both sides BS in this scenario. And finally, standing up to Nazism is not a disagreement. F those guys. Yeah, this is the message Lee Zeldin does not get. And yet we keep reelecting him. We've reelected another white supremacist back into Congress, the equivalent of a neo-Nazi, right here on Long Island, Suffolk County. I am so disappointed in people here. I am so disappointed. Really, this is what you want. This is what this guy does, has been doing for the last several years. Will not condemn right-wing terrorism, will not condemn Nazis, will not condemn Proud Boys. Instead, when they get what's coming to them, because they're going around, I saw lots and lots of videos of this, of them attacking people in crowds that they thought were throwing things at their cars. Turned out they weren't. Somebody was, and I don't blame them, because you're a damn Nazi going through a street. Yeah, you should have something thrown at you. But what does Lee Zeldin do? He defends the Proud Boys. Doesn't defend the people standing on the street, no. Doesn't defend people who have cars run over them when they're demonstrating, no. Doesn't say Black Lives Matter, can't say those words. They're impossible for him to say. He has to say something stupid, like Blue Lives Matter. Blue lives don't matter. There's no such thing as blue lives. Blue is not a race. Blue is a profession. Why do I have to tell people these things?
I know, it feels like this constant thing that is never conveyed. Like, as much as you challenge it with the truth or with facts or with a logic mm-hmm. that really is indisputable and has a lengthy American history, and confronting this and in the ugliness of it and what we stand for, and we're still going to try to draw a false equivalency, and we're still so threatened by natural changes in the populace of this country and the evolution of our society, and so resentful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So resentful of the changes in this country, and that we whites didn't benefit enough. Everybody's out to get the whites. It's really pathetic.
It's like on South Park, the family whose last name are white is white. Everyone's out to get the whites. it is almost as comical. It really is, because you know when even people. I grew up poor. I know what it's like to be poor. I know what it's like to be, you know, basically pointed at for that reason, for being different. But it's nothing. It's nothing like growing up black, and I don't care if you're rich or poor. It's different, and it's something I know I'll never understand. But for people to say, oh, no, I'm as oppressed because I was passed over for a job, or I didn't get into the school I wanted, or some nonsense like that that affects everybody. No, you're not oppressed, and you will never convince me you are. How is it such a task for people like this to simply show some solidarity, show some support? That's all people are looking for.
Well, they've been conditioned to look at it as weakness. Caring mm-hmm. for other people and not being righteously, like, selfish and so forth. Like just because you didn't experience that discrimination it somehow means in their mind that, like, you can't care for others, you can't consider people of color when you interact with them, that they have had those kinds of difficulties. The sheer, like, just non-existence of empathy.
Uh-huh.
It's really about empathy. Like, imagining what it is like for someone other than you, who looks other than you, who had less means than you. That's not liberal privilege. That's empathy. That's caring about society. Realizing that, you know, if I hire someone in whatever tedious business or venture I try to come up with to make my community or make my life better, like, I want them to be cared for somewhat. And if I can't provide them health care, if I can't provide for them in some way, I want some recourse to be able to create a healthy employee, because that is a virtuous thing. If you're trying to build something, you want the people that are working for you not to be deranged and out of their minds trying to make ends meet. Like, that is ultimately good for you. If you're going to be that selfish, try to at least see the several hops of, like, of social cloth, like, that we're all knit together in. And if this era hasn't shown us, I really don't know what else could communicate that. I mean, looking at, like, the food lines and so on, I mean, we
yeah.
really are dependent on one another for survival, whether you like it or not. And so, I don't know. I mean, just even that example, to my mind, it's that you can't convince someone, even with that kind of logic, that is inherently a little selfish. I'm saying, like, a business owner would want to be able to employ people that can, like, you know, do the job and not be a drain on themselves without it, or on the business, because you've got to, you know, get around all the other chaos in their lives before you can actually get the work you need done. That's just one way of looking at it, and I've resigned myself. I don't think it's possible to try to walk people around in this logic of the kind of society we are capable of having, because they do not want to see it. They don't want to be convinced. They don't want to have that empathy. They just think that this society is about the accumulation of things and wealth, mm-hmm. or about their religion. And that bothers me too.
Just about political advantage. You know, not losing your strategic...
I heard a comment about this, and it was really, what is the end game? It was someone asking on the call-in show I listened to, and they were just saying, like, what is the end game for the Republicans? When they catch the car, what are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want a theocracy? Is that it? Are we going for a theocracy in America? I'm not saying it's Handmaid's Tale, but it just seems like this country, in their mind, would be better off if we were all praying and if we all believed in the same theological, you know, divinity. And mind you, even Christianity is fractious. And right now, the political arm, half of it, is being run by, I want to say evangelicals, or at least people that are obsessed with reproduction. And I would take a good look at that, especially if you're religious, because you're being hijacked.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
If that's your one thing. But it's not even that.
Mm-hmm.
It's that accumulation, that selfishness, the lack of empathy, not seeing that society is built on all of us. Our society would be better off if all of us were doing well and better. And I know that's an ideal. I know that's not necessarily possible, but it's certainly worth working toward.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing where the potential is and who has the ability to actually make things better, I just don't understand how anyone can hitch their wagon to what we've been going through the last 4 years, thinking that's going to make things better for them. And when clearly it hasn't. I mean, there are people literally on their deathbeds right now who are still denying they have COVID.
Yeah.
That's really happening. That is how strong it is. That is what being in a cult is like. But, you know, getting back to how did we get a white supremacist as our representative in Suffolk County, I don't know. It's something that is not new to us, though. We've always had racism here. I remember growing up, you know, there were Confederate flags everywhere on Long Island. I think a lot of people just like Southern music, but there was a good amount of racism, too. And I recall lots and lots of people using very racist language, let's just put it that way. People who know better. People who have grown out of it, obviously. But it was a thing. And we have changed. We've changed without the politicians. We've changed on our own. We've torn down the Confederate flags, even in the South. So there is progress. There are good things that have happened. But, you know, there was another congressional race, Staten Island, this guy Max Rose. He lost, and one of the reasons I heard, according to a newspaper, was that it was backlash for the anti-racist protests, an anti-police brutality protest. Pushback for being anti-racist. Pushback for calling cops on their violence when it's not called for. What kind of world are we living in where you have to be careful if you criticize racism? This guy lost his seat. You know, he actually shut down a white supremacist group. There was a great piece on Vice News about this. He actually was able to shut them down by investigating them. And he lost his seat in Staten Island. I mean, yeah, it's Staten Island, but it's not that different from here. It's not that different from America. So don't be surprised when the Trumps and the Zeldins are just taking over left and right. They defend terrorists. They defend terrorists like Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, the kid who went into a crowd of people with a gun and just started shooting. Because he was shooting protesters, anti-racist protesters. No indication they were actually destroying anything, destroying property. He shot a couple people who tried to disarm him. What do you do when a guy's got a gun in a crowd? The heroic thing is disarm them. Well, at least one person lost their life doing that. Are they a hero? Not in people like Lee Zeldin or Donald Trump's eyes. Nope. The hero is Kyle Rittenhouse. The guy went into a crowd with a gun because he didn't like what people were doing in the street. People weren't killing people. Maybe somebody was vandalizing property. No indication it was the victims. But why is it? I want to ask these people this question. It's okay in your eyes to kill people who are damaging property, but it's not okay to damage property if you're protesting killing. What the hell are you on? Seriously. Where are the investigations? We're seeing investigations, lawsuits into every single state and county and village where Trump feels he might be able to turn it around. Basically, just pick and choose. You know, you don't like the result? Okay, let's try and overturn it here, all right, over there. That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works. Where are the investigations about voter suppression? Voter intimidation, those people with the pickup trucks, honking their horns, demanding people vote for Trump while they're lined up. How about people being pepper sprayed while marching to the polls by the police? How about gerrymandering where your vote doesn't count for crap? Or a tyranny of the minority where it doesn't matter if you get the majority of votes, you can still lose. Or just everything that COVID has put us through. All that we've lost because of the ineptitude of the people in charge. Yeah, Lee Zeldin got us PPEs. Big deal. That's your job. You're supposed to be doing that. And the only reason you got them for us was because you're such a good buddy of Trump's that he passed over somebody else. Look at how he's treating Cuomo now, because Cuomo criticized him. Okay, you don't get the vaccine now. That's the mentality of the people we're dealing with. So no, getting us PPEs, that's what you're supposed to be doing. Trump might even have gotten some credit for pushing the vaccine along. But, you know, there's this 250,000 people dead that you can't get past.
Yeah, but he's going to expect thanks.
Oh, he's not getting it. And that's what he's holding out for with Cuomo, to bend the knee, you know, so that he can get the vaccine for his people. And there's people actually falling for this, saying Cuomo's gone too far. It's disgusting. It really is. Anyway, we could go on for hours about this. I don't think we should. I haven't seen any good quotes from Giuliani in that courtroom. Maybe he's been kicked out.
Just don't be surprised, people, when there isn't a lot of like willingness to put up with you because you've shown your commitment to this crap. You haven't listened to people that were saying, hey, we might not be like great friends, but you've got to do this for the sake of our country. That kind of ignorance, that kind of unwillingness will probably be met with the same thing. There are bigger people, perhaps, than me or, your average demonstrator, maybe in politics, but I wouldn't have high hopes. This mm-hmm. country is hurting, and the opportunity to build any kind of bridge, the opportunity to say this is enough, it is long since passed.
Yeah, there is no way that Trump can leave cleanly at this point. He keeps doubling down, saying he won the election. His ass is going to get kicked out regardless, but this is not going to be a clean transition. And people will pay for this with their lives because the whole COVID-19 plan can't be put into place if you don't cooperate, if you don't share information. And there are so many other examples of this, too. International intelligence, foreign relations, all kinds of programs that are going to have to be jump-started on January 20th. It's not good. It's not good. It's so irresponsible. And when you hear about people in high political offices that are just letting it happen, you realize what they're afraid of more than anything are Democrats. They are so afraid of Democrats. They have to vote against them at every turn. They have to do whatever they can to keep them getting in power. And when they do get into power, they have to do everything possible to make that as difficult as they possibly can.
That's your party.
Yeah.
That's you people. You're vindictive, awful people. I wish I could say better.
Yeah. Not all of you. There are some good people out there. Let's not be mistaken here. But you got to speak up. You got to stand up. This is not the time to just disappear into the shadows and hope it's all going to work out. Now, you got to call these people on the crap they're doing. This is the time. This is the time to speak up.
Yeah, the smugness and allowance has got to go. If you're not with the future that will be, you will be left in the past.
One way or another. As you mentioned, things do change even without politicians. And we are moving forward. And that's good to see. But this kind of behavior, what we've seen over the past couple of weeks, wow. I mean, I've been surprised so many times in the last few years, but this is a new low. And I just hope that there's recovery in our future. All right. It is time. For our feature that we haven't gotten to in a while because of the election, Films of the Year That Was, where Kyle and I go and watch all of the Academy Award-winning pictures of all time, going back into the 1920s and even some films before then, and watching the domestic and international best film of the year. And we're up to 1983. And which one do you have there, Kyle?
Okay, so I'll start with the American winner, Terms of Endearment.
Oh, Terms of Endearment, yes.
Yeah, and it has several stars really early on in their careers. I would mention Jeff Daniels, Danny DeVito, Jack Nicholson, but of course Shirley MacLaine, John Lithgow.
Danny DeVito was in that.
He is. He's in it. It's a really... what you would say, I guess, is like an ensemble cast or something... like a big feature nowadays, but these people were just coming up, and I think it is this kind of interesting story about, I guess, modern families and marriage and of course, I guess, swinging and relationships and it just sort of difficulties of all of that.
I had trouble figuring out if it was supposed to be a comedy or a drama, and I read later that, well, it's supposed to be both. It's supposed to be a comedy, but with dramatic themes. Because you follow basically this mother-daughter relationship from her being an infant, the daughter, obviously, to, and I'm not giving anything away here, folks, well, I am giving it away, but you should know that we are going to talk about where the film goes. So if you didn't see this film and you want to, turn me down now. All right. So from her birth until her death, when she passes away from cancer, and it was moving. It was moving. It was realistic. It was something about it. You know, the daughter's son. I thought he did an incredible job as a 10-year-old, just with the contempt he was showing for his mother. You know, because every kid is like that at some point, where you just don't care. And there was a moment in the supermarket where she didn't have enough money to pay, and he just had such disdain in his eyes. You don't have enough money, you know? I mean, it's his family being embarrassed, but he was more embarrassed that he was part of that family. And that's something I think a lot of kids can identify with. And also, on her deathbed, just... he didn't have a big sappy scene. He was resistant to any of that. And I thought that was just really realistic, and he brought that performance to that film. I think that's probably all he did, but it was really good.
Yeah. And, of course, the grandmother is great, too. She sort of has a love interest living next door in Jack Nicholson, playing Garrett Breedlove, who himself is like sort of a little bit of a philanderer, just a kind of a ladies man, always like has younger women over, and he's kind of a drunk too.
Oh, he's an astronaut.
But he's an astronaut, yeah. So
all astronauts are like that.
But she sees through him, and she brings him down a notch, but also I think he teaches her a little bit about being open to love and her kind of expectations versus his view of the world and when he's not playing up the astronaut part. So it there was really cool character development. So I agree. It was pretty cool.
Had you seen that before?
No. I'd known of it, but it was sort of a vague memory, but I'd never seen it, and I didn't really know much about the story.
We're getting to the point where I've seen most of the films at some point, but I usually forget them, so it's like seeing them for the first time.
Yeah, I'm starting to get there. Like, some of the next ones I actually saw in school, but I won't get into that. The international film is Swedish. It was actually from 1982, but it is called Fanny and Alexander, and this is by Ingmar Bergman.
His last film.
Yes, and we've seen his stuff before. We saw, several of his films. They're kind of going to escape me because I don't remember off the top of my head.
It actually isn't his last film because he did something else, but technically it's his last film.
Well, you can't stop a good director.
And also when you say it's 1982, that's when it was released there, but it won in 1983, so legally we're on solid ice.
Since you're such an expert, maybe you can go ahead and tell the audience everything else about the film that you enjoyed so much.
It's one of my favorite films, I can tell you that.
Oh, okay, great. So this one is an epic, and I mean epic in that it was very long, which is kind of cool, but it flies by. You see this thing, these a lot of extra shots, a lot of scenery, like the flowing of the river and so on whenever you go back to the cathedral. So there's a lot of setting and a lot of slow storytelling with things around in the room, in the house, in the landscape and so on. But basically what this is about is two siblings who are coming up in this really lovely family that is a family that owns a theater, and they start out with like a Christmas story that they're entertaining everyone with, and then they kind of host a little party for the cast, and you see the family thriving and basically revolving around this theater business, and it's a life really for the whole family, and everyone is engaged in it. And the patriarch of the family eventually falls ill, and various aspects of life change.
Well,
and part of that is his daughter, I believe, who is the mother of the two siblings.
No, hold on. You're going off on the wrong road here. He's not the patriarch of the family. He's Fanny Alexander's father. He's the son of the matriarch of the family. So he's their father, and he's one of three brothers.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess I missed the generation.
It's not hard to miss because there are so many people. There really are.
Yeah.
And it's all in one big house, which confused me, too. I didn't know where everybody lived.
Yeah. Yeah, so the grieving widow is basically swept away, swept off her feet, or sort of manipulated by a bishop who marries her and whisks her away to his austere life in the church and requires her not to bring anything, possessions, really cutting her off in a lot of ways.
When you
like
say
kidnapping.
Yeah, when you say things like swept off her feet and whisked away, it wasn't anywhere romantic like that. It was pretty depressing the way it all happened. Just kind of like walking into your doom.
Well, we only see her when he's really posing it, but you get the sense that he was there initially in the grieving part, and then some time goes by, and they've clearly begun entangling their lives a bit and start considering cohabitating, and this is sort of part of the terms when he's at that point. They've obviously built up some kind of a relationship, but she doesn't look well. She seems away, like distant to what was her really fun and lively family that is going through this terrible loss. So she's kind of distant, and the kids are kind of along for the ride, figuring it all out. And so we soon see how this timeline unfolds through the eyes of Alexander.
Yeah, and he is a real troublemaker, Alexander. He basically believes in telling stories, and the bishop does not go for that at all. Basically saying that, imagination is entrusted by artists and musicians and things like that, not for the likes of us, and you will do what you're told. And it's one of those horror films in a way, but you don't see horror. You just imagine horror because of the severe discipline of this guy crushing the spirit of a kid that only a few scenes ago was living in such a festive environment. And it's just incredible to see those worlds. Because the second part, that's more of like Ingmar Bergman film in the bishop's home, kind of stark, austere, religious. And the fun and the celebration that we saw before and that we see at the end, that's something different. And as his last film, I think that was the message that he was trying to send, is that we don't have to be downcast all the time, that we can win against these. Hey, it's kind of like what we've been saying. You can win in the end, but it's going to be hard, and you can have all these long fights.
Well, and there's a lot to face in life, and I think that's true in a lot of coming of age films, but in this way it shows really the trajectory of that experience, that it's a constant, and for an introspective young person like Alexander, there's this constant sense of things, that lack of safety and a difficult time, I think, but also a resilience that, through having been conditioned to being sort of let down or at least being upset, I think he's actually able to cope when things get really awful. But at the same time, is not really deserving of a lot of what life throws at him. But I think you see how family and how people around you can help you, and that you're really not that far away from help. And then I think there's a certain twist of, like, magic that Ingmar Bergman's throwing in there at the end, with the use of the puppets and the theater coming back as sort of this thing that was always there, and that when you need it most, it's there and may save you. And I think that's really sort of a beautiful thing that comes around in the end.
And what I was saying before about it being a horror film, it's a horror film because you imagine the horror that is happening. You don't always have to see gore. You don't always have to see violence. You know, sometimes it's just in the way somebody looks at you, you know? And
also it's a different sort of theater. Maybe, like, it's not lively and fun the way he grew up with, but it's a different stage, it's a different theater, but it's all make-believe, you know, it's all sort of put on. In this case, it's a church. I mean, that might, you know, may have been controversial or blasphemous at the time, but it's like, yeah, how much different is this than telling stories from an artist or from dance or from singing? You know, it is much in the same way, but has stricter boundaries and more austere look, but it is itself just made up.
So that's Fanny and Alexander. We recommend it highly. In fact, there's also a TV series that goes along with it, which might be worth looking into as well. A lot of uncut scenes. That's going to do it for the feature this week. And that's going to do it for us this week, too. But one thing we do have to remind people about, the Georgia Senate races are coming up. We know we have listeners in that part of the world. The registration deadline for the runoff is December 7th. The runoff itself is on January 5th. But the registration deadline, if you're not registered to vote, is December 7th. And early voting will be starting fairly soon as well. I think that's starting in a week or so. I'll have more details on that as we get them. But that will determine whether Mitch McConnell runs the country or Joe Biden runs the country. So, interesting times ahead. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Oh, give me a poodle with bushy black hair. Give me a ring and a box full of air. Give me a palace without any walls. Give me a pig and a red rubber ball. I should be happy to meet with your mother and visit the doctor on this sunny day. It's very warm for the middle of winter, and Mexico City is so far away. Covered in fur, we were not meant to.